I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
So my next interview is with Gary Keane and Andrew McConnell. We talk about their new film, Gaza, which was playing at Hot Docs 2019 here in Toronto. And I had the pleasure and the fortune to have a conversation with them about this important new film. It's a beautiful piece. You're going to want to see this and dig it up if you can. Find it somewhere. If it's not in a theater, it'll be online eventually for sure after it does the festival circuit. Gaza documentary. .com for more information there. You'll find out a little bit more about the film and about some of the history behind it and so on. We talk about why the situation in the Middle East here in this part of the world is so misunderstood, and that's an understatement to say the least. We talk about the ordinary people behind all of this and why so often we just get this one-dimensional view, and what are some of the dehumanizing aspects to all of this and how desensitized we become to the violence. Andrew and Gary talk about the forgotten souls of Gaza, and they talk about the grace and the humor and how so many of these people have become their extended family. And you're going to want to listen in and hear that depth and that warmth and that intimacy. We talk about why the sea is a character in this film and why maybe, just maybe, this problem in the Middle East is just too difficult to solve, or at least it certainly seems like that on the surface. We talk about compromise and about surfing in Gaza and what pulled both Andrew and Gary into this film in the first place. So stay tuned. Make sure you listen in on the conversation, but try to find the film as well. Don't forget gazadocumentary.com. And if you want to find out more information about what I do, davidpecklive.com, you can do that, about my speaking and writing. You can order a copy of Real Change is Incremental through there as well, a book that I published a few years back. And so many more interviews as well on Face to facelive.ca. Check it out. And if you can support the work we're doing financially, I would really appreciate that. You can do that through patreon.com. If you can't do that, totally get it. But you know what you could do instead is leave us a review, maybe a like, maybe a few stars, a few thumbs up can go a long way in this digital world. It's a busy world in the podcasting universe right now. And then don't forget rabble.ca as well for more information, more articles, blogs, podcasts, and so on. Check that out, rabble.ca as well. News for the rest of us. And coming right up about their new film, Gaza, we've got Andrew McConnell and Gary Keane. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by two very special guests here with us today from Toronto, but I'm guessing they're from other parts of the world. They're here with us today at Hot Docs to talk about their new film, Gaza. We've got Gary Keane and Andrew McConnell with us here on the line today on Face to Face. Thanks for joining us, guys.
You're very welcome. Good to be here.
So why don't you, you know, typically I usually assume that most of my listeners haven't seen the films that we talk about here, that maybe may not be familiar with the filmmakers themselves. but they're usually pretty familiar with the issues. I've got a pretty engaged, you know, audience with a, I would say, a fairly rich global perspective. Tell us a little bit about the film. I mean, the title obviously gives it away a little bit, but as directors and having lived with this for quite some time, tell us a little bit about what the film is about.
Well, it's a film about, obviously, Gaza, the Gaza Strip in the Middle East, which is a strip of land that's 40 kilometers long, that is suffers from conflict regularly because it is under occupation from Israel, and it's blockaded on both sides by Israel and Egypt. And within Gaza, 2 million, tons of 2 million Palestinians. And in recent years, it's been ruled by Hamas, and it's a place where people are familiar with it because it's regularly in the news headlines when invariably conflict breaks out between Hamas and Israel. So it's a place that people will have heard of, but we think nobody really has a clear picture of what Gaza is and what life is like there. And so that's really at the heart of our film, and what we've tried to do with the film is to bring people into this sort of quite mysterious sort of place and misunderstood place, and to really give them a clear idea of exactly how life is there for the residents.
Before I ask you the next question, I just want to say congratulations on the film and absolutely loved it. It's always hard to say that a film is beautiful and gorgeous to watch when it's about such a difficult subject. But it really is. I mean, it's a beautiful film. So thanks.
Thank you. No, thanks very much.
So you talk about this misunderstanding. So here's the question: is this a film about the people or about the place?
It's very much both. I mean, we set out, and hence the name, we struggled with what to call it for a long time, and then we went, why don't we just call it Gaza, because that's literally what it's about. It's about the place, Gaza Strip, and it's also about the inhabitants of that troubled place. And it's very much, we always wanted to go into Gaza and tell the story from the people, from the inhabitants, from the ordinary people who live there, and try and eke out an existence there and try and make their lives as normal as possible. But under the circumstances, that's really difficult, as you would have seen from our portrayal. It's very much about a people and a place, and it's a portrait of same, you know.
You say ordinary people. I mean, I think that's one of the many things that your film does so well, I think, is, I mean, this. You know, I guess you could sort of ask the question, why do you have to humanize others? But I mean, in this world that we live in, it seems, you know, we live in a fairly divided world, a lot of misunderstandings, a lot of people don't have a sense for what really goes on in, you know, those places or that other part of the world, or in this case, the Middle East. I think you've really humanized the Middle East in a way that I would think a lot of viewers may not have that understanding going in. They might on the surface have that. If somebody asked you, you know, some specific questions about it, you might say, oh yeah, this is the way it is, this is the way it is. But really, when you drill down, you guys portray this in a way that I guess was a little unexpected for me as well. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. And you're right, you know, we wanted this to be surprising for people. We want people to sit down and really be sort of taken aback by, why haven't we seen anything like this before? You know, this is regular life. This is people going about it. This is seeing families. Just very, I mean, ordinary stuff on the surface. But because it's from a place like Gaza, it feels original, and it feels surprising. And that's really, I think, the strength of the film, that we're going beyond these news flashes, you know, which in many ways do a lot to reinforce stereotypes and really don't promote any sort of understanding and obviously lack any depth. So the great power of documentary films is that ability to have depth and to really investigate a place and the people in this way. So So we hope that's really what we've achieved through Gaza.
Talk to me a little bit about empathy. I mean, I felt like it's not a place in the world that I've ever visited. I've traveled a fair bit, but I haven't been able to get to this part of the world. And yet I felt as if I was really empathizing here. Can you talk to me a little bit more about that, and how was that really intentional on your part, or is that sort of a byproduct of the process of making this film? And both of you answer one, yeah, whatever would be great.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what's lacking in the world these days, you know, is empathy. Because I think for the most part in these troubled areas, you know, people only get fed a one-dimensional view of what they are. And it's normally from the conflict point of view, or normally it's politically agenda written, or it's from some perspective anyway, that causes a kind of a dehumanizing process to occur, where you kind of forget about the normal people that live behind all of this bad politics and trouble, and you somehow get desensitized to the violence because you see it so regularly and see it so often, and it tends to normalize a really abnormal situation. So I think what we were striving to do, and what was very important, and what we tried to do, was to embed ourselves with the ordinary people of Gaza, and in doing so try and gain back some empathy that people should have for ordinary people. And that's not only Gaza, it's, you know, can be anywhere in the world that's undergoing the kind of things that the people in Gaza have to endure day in, day out. So I think empathy is a hugely important thing for people to have for other people on this planet. And I think that's one thing that's lacking hugely in regard to the poor, forgotten souls in Gaza, who, for the most part, we feel have been abandoned by the international community and forgotten about. And it's a terrible tragedy when 2 million people can be just forgotten about, and nobody gets to hear their side of the story, and nobody gets to see what this, you know, horrible situation is doing to them.
I love the way that you both in this film have captured the mystery and the wonder, the playfulness of these people, of the stories that you follow, the you know, the young woman and the cello, the surfing, I gotta say by the way, I think it's the taxi driver who pulls over for a coffee on the beach. That's got to be my favorite coffee shop ever. I want to have a cup of coffee there. We should be doing the interview there.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I'd love to be back there talking to him and drinking coffee.
It's juxtaposition, obviously. But this is the way it really is. This isn't just the magic of editing here. This is what's happening on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, it's a place of huge contradictions, because when you first go to Gaza, you know, you're really struck by how welcoming the people are, which is quite a shock, because you expect to find this place sort of in rubble, and
right,
you imagine that the locals wouldn't be that hospitable to outsiders. But in actual fact, they're incredibly welcoming, incredibly funny and vibrant people. And when there isn't conflict, which is most of the time, you know, they're just trying to live out as normal life as possible. And they do that with great grace and humor, which is really something special to see, and we wanted to portray that as much as possible. And so that's where you see wonderful characters like the taxi driver, who you know, is just a really charming, charming individual who seems to know everyone in Gaza, and everyone, like our cello player and our little boy, Ahmed, the fisher boy. You know, they all have these really, they're trying to lead normal lives, but most abnormal of circumstances.
Somebody in the film said, and I don't remember who it was, it might have been Mohammed, I'm not sure, but the quote was, "Everybody knows that Gaza is in complete darkness." Do you guys, as filmmakers and advocates, and I guess you could, you know, argue journalists, I suppose, to some degree in this respect, do you agree with that? I mean, or did you come away, or do you watch this film now with more hopeful eyes or more cynical eyes?
very, very difficult to be hopeful when you see the escalating, downward escalation of events in that part of the world. You know, I mean, it's just frighteningly, it's frightening for us now having an extended Gaza family, because we got to know so many people over the 5 years we visited, and it's excruciating to watch events unfold on a weekly basis, and none of which really give you any sense of hope that the people are going to be offered any sort of freedoms that us other people in the world enjoy and take for granted. So the people themselves always try to instill a little bit of hope in their lives. They have to, for their kids and their children and their wives and their families, their extended families. Because what do you do? How do you get up in the morning every morning faced with that, and try and, you know, eke out any sort of normality when you know what's after occurring or what's just about to occur? One of the individuals, it's not a quote in the film, but one of the individuals remember saying to us, you know, there's three phases to our lives in Gaza. We're either preparing for war, in war, or mopping up after war. And that's a horrible thing to think about, that any race of people, any you know, community of people would have that three horrible cycles in their lives. But it is the truth when you're there. I mean, the place is wrecked and falling down, and yet you do have people getting up in the morning and putting a smile on their face and trying to create a facade at least of normality for their children and for themselves to be able to get up in the morning. So it's, you know, I'd love to be able to say we're hopeful, but it's very hard to say so, unfortunately.
You got to wonder about, I mean, I certainly don't deny it, that's for sure. And yet there's something about the human spirit, isn't there, that we bend towards, I don't want to polarize here, but it seems that we do when times get difficult, you know, at least some of us, and I'm smiling when I say this, because I'm not sure I would be one of those people, but, you know, this rolling up of our sleeves and trying to make the best out of this pretty horrific situation. I mean, I can't deny, and I'm sure you guys had conversations about the irony of this, the invisible border, as somebody talked about it in the film, the sea being the invisible border, and yet this is what provides some livelihood, food, opportunities for people to gather around, have a coffee by, surf on, play in, etc. There's something profoundly both tragic and mysterious and beautiful about it at the same time.
Certainly between we visited in 2015, and actually we focused a lot more on the sea in the initial kind of stages of filming and character choices and all of that and the way we filmed, because the sea is such an important part of Gazans' life, and you know, they see it as their oxygen, source of oxygen. Sure. They bring their families down, they sit around, they bathe, they watch the sun rise and set. Unfortunately, though, when we went back in 2018 to film, because of the electricity shortages, because all of the sewage plants or treatment plants have closed down, and because the sewage system was basically, you know, breaking up or around the entire strip, then the sea has become a little bit of a sewer now, and people have stopped going, people have stopped swimming, and people have stopped using it for recreation, and it's a huge, huge, huge loss for the people in Gaza not to have that resource and be able to use it, and it's a huge metaphor for the entire place and what's happening to the place, really, that their one outlet, their one source of, you know, breath that they have, their one sense of freedom, even though it's not, but they still can see their horizon, and sometimes even without a gunboat sitting on it patrolling. And when that is taken away from an entire population of people, you kind of think, is that the last straw, really? You know, is that it? Is there nothing left, really, to give them that sense of freedom and hope? And it's horribly sad, really, that whole element.
I mean, guys, I don't want you, don't misunderstand the question here, and it sounds really simple on a certain level, but I mean, you know, the lion, and this is a thread throughout, the sea, the juxtaposition of, you know, between the cello and the music and the young woman and her hope and desire for the future, and it just comes out in so many ways, and then the tragedy on the other. But is this a political problem? I mean, somebody says in the film, near the end of the film, we want to live, and that's what people need to know. Well, I feel like I can say on the surface, yeah, I know you guys want to live, but I mean, how do we communicate this? you know, to the world, to the international community, to say there's way more going on here than meets the eye? Or is it really easy just to wash our hands of the Middle East? Does any of that make sense? I'm almost frustrated by my own question because it seems so simple on one level and yet kind of comprehensive on another, if that makes sense.
No, it's an excellent point. And it seems that everyone has washed their hands of the Middle East. It seems, well, especially the Palestinian situation, because there is no attempt now to try and solve this from the international community. You get the feeling that this has just proved too difficult for everybody.
Right.
And they've abandoned any sort of attempts to even begin the peace process. I mean, a lot of the blame must lie with the intransigence of Israel and America's participation in that. And now America, I mean, there's no more illusions in terms of where their support lies. They don't even pay lip service to the idea of a peace process, you know, in Israel. So with the current administration in America, that situation is not going to improve. There is blind support there for the current status quo within Israel. The international community, Europe, hasn't got the heart to really take us on again. So the way Israeli society has gone, it's moved so much to the right that the Palestinians are rarely mentioned in any discussions. So I think moving forward, I think there's very, very little reason for hope that any sort of negotiation is going to even begin anytime soon. So it's extremely bleak outlook.
Are you guys hoping that your film can be a catalyst for that kind of change? Is that the perfect world for you? Is that the Hope So universe in the sense that it, you know, there's a groundswell that is created as a result of a more nuanced or you know, intimate conversation about the issue?
Yeah, I think myself and Andrew are old enough and wise enough now not to be naive enough to think that, you know, our film is going to make the difference and change everything. But, you know, I hope it does is communicate to audiences the need for participation at whatever level you can. This is our only way of doing it. This is all we do. I mean, we're not activists. We're not politicians. We're not, you know, this is what we can do. This is how we can apply our voice and put our cards on the table and say, come on, guys, everybody needs to start thinking that there's real people behind this. This isn't, you know, a byline in a page 7 of a newspaper or a
right.
second, a news item that lasts 30 seconds and it's another gun battle or another feud or, you know, it's real people involved in this and real society's being tortured on a daily basis. And all we can do is kind of get the message out there, show it to as many people as we can, have conversations like we're having with you, talk to audiences, speak of it, you know, raise awareness of it, you know, join other people who want to create a voice. But it's like the doctors who snort, fart, and hears who. Like, how many people do you need to have screaming before the voice actually gets through that bubble of I don't know, lack of. I'm lost for words sometimes, you know, because it's so deep and it's so convoluted and it's so complex that, you know, we talk to anybody who wants to talk to us about this film and we show it wherever anybody wants to screen it to whoever wants to watch it. And, you know, but it's still frustrating to think that there's so little change happening on the actual ground that the people who really can make a difference, the politicians and the leaders of the free world, you know, that they aren't actually prioritizing the likes of Gaza and putting it very high on their agenda and saying, look, enough is enough. These people live in what amounts to an open prison. They're blocked in. The blockade isn't working. They're not allowed to travel. They can't see their families. You know, essential medicines aren't coming into the strip to treat people. Cancer patients are dying left, right, and center because there's no cancer treatment and they're not allowed in or out. I mean, you could keep ranting on for 10 minutes about the level and the amount of problems that these people have to endure because of a political system that's not been, you know, held accountable for this, you know, inhuman behavior. So I don't know. Yes.
Well,
I know we sound incredibly pessimistic sometimes.
Yes.
But, I mean, yeah, it's more realistic.
I totally get it, and you've lived it. It sounds like you've been shooting for what, three, four years?
About four years.
Yeah, I don't know how you can't be somewhat cynical. I mean, I'd like to think you guys have a few sparks of hope left in you with respect to some of this stuff.
And we wouldn't have done what we
fair
what we
point
did without, yeah. without trying to maintain that and hope that someday we'll live to see, you know, our friends and you know, out there enjoy the freedoms that we enjoy, you know.
What do you say? I'd love to talk a little bit more about how this became a film for you guys, you know, the catalyst. Where did this conversation start? Because that, to me, is a fascinating story as well, just to know how you were drawn in to the dialogue enough for you to buy those first plane tickets and grab the camera and go. I'd love to talk about that in a second, but is this just to riff a little bit off that political issue and that sort of cynical side? Is this about Hamas? Can you be that sort of simply, can you do that simple of an analysis? Or, and I guess I'm trying to encourage people not to wash their hands of this part of the Middle East, if that makes sense.
No, it's too simplistic to say it's just about Hamas. You know, if you look at the West Bank, where Hamas doesn't govern, they're also really struggling in the West Bank. Palestinians there are still continue to lose their homes every day, are moved off land. Settlements continue to expand. There's nothing there to suggest that, you know, this is purely just a problem with Hamas. It's much wider than that. Hamas itself is quite a weak organization. They're certainly struggling at the moment. They lost a lot of support over the years within Gaza. They're struggling to maintain order there and even pay their own people. They do, yes, fire missiles at Israel. This is true. But the retaliation is really disproportionate. And,
right.
And the rockets that they do fire are sort of rudimentary for the most part. You do get the feeling that they're used, really, they're blamed every time for,
right,
for the, even for the blockade itself. You know, this is all Hamas's fault. They have to be, they have to have this blockade. So it's a very simple way also to sort of just lay the whole blame for everything. But that doesn't really scratch the surface of the wider conflict and why it's so sort of stuck where it is, and there hasn't been movement in all these years, and it's much more than just Hamas. So, yeah, I mean, again, this is deep into the politics.
Yeah,
of the
absolutely.
But
as I'm listening to you speak about this, I just think about whatever the real issue is or issues are, obviously, and it's complicated and it's nuanced and it goes back years and et cetera, and we've got all kinds of things that would have to be, you know, brought to the table in various tables and in different ways. What about the human rights aspect of it? What about the fact that people don't have electricity and aren't getting the food that they need, and people are going to jail for debt, for you know, the I mean, that story in itself that you guys tease out is crazy to me. The, as you say, the disproportionate sort of response. I mean, some of this stuff we don't seem to talk about as much in the media, it seems to me. And so, anyway, just as I didn't ask the question as if there was some sort of simple answer there, but I do wonder sometimes how we polarize these issues, just not in the hope that they'll go away, but almost.
Look, I think you know, regimes tend to use any opportunity to justify their actions, and Hamas is a convenient tool to do that. You know, I mean, it's very easy for a legitimate government to turn around and call an organization a terrorist organization, and I'm not saying they aren't, I'm just saying it's convenient to be able to say that and use that as an excuse to not involve themselves in discussions or negotiations to try and better the situation or come to some sort of a resolution. I mean, we had it in our own country for years in Northern Ireland, and it took, you know, very brave people on all sides of the world to come together and to sit down with the people that they considered terrorists as well, and to talk it out. And now, you know, thankfully we've peace in Northern Ireland. There's certainly some level of it, or an awful lot more than we used to. So it's incumbent on anybody, if they want to change a situation and if they want to correct the situation, there are means and ways and means to do that. There is absolutely, you know, history has proven that over and over again, that if people sit around, all the parties involved in a situation, no matter how bad, if they sit around and they try and trash out a compromise, and there's a will to want to change something, it could change in the morning. It absolutely could be changed in the morning, you know. Yeah. So that's the frightening thing, and that's the bad politics that's going on at the moment that's causing such a traumatic, you know, effect on these people's lives. You know?
Would you say that, and I've forgotten the taxi driver's name, is it?
Ahmed,
thank you. He said, doesn't he say most of the people here are ordinary like me and that they want peace, essentially?
Yeah.
Would you guys agree with that? You included it in the film, so I'm assuming you would.
Of course. We purposely stayed away from the extremists of any sort, but we met so many thousands of ordinary people in Gaza, and not one of them just didn't cry out for the same thing. They wanted peace. They wanted to have a normal life. They weren't extremists. They weren't activists. They weren't racist. They weren't even particularly bad-mouthing Israel to some degree. They were just crying out for somebody to come and help them out and to let them raise their families and have food on the table. You know,
simple stuff. Yeah, we want to live. You know, we want to live. That's what people need to know.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Tell me a little bit about, and sadly, we're getting close to the end of the interview, unfortunately, and you guys are heading off to your opening night at Hot Docs, but tell me a little bit about how you stepped in. I mean, obviously, your history, Irish history, has probably played a role, but tell me a little bit more about how you found yourself in Gaza making the film.
Well, it was myself who first went there in 2010. I had read a story about a group of surfers in the Gaza Strip. And it just grabbed me immediately. I thought this was an incredible story that people were surfing in Gaza. Being a surfer myself, I grew up surfing on the west coast of Ireland. It's an added bonus, you know.
So let me get this straight. You have surfing in Ireland and you have U2? Is that?
We have fantastic surfing in Northern Ireland, man. Get some big waves now. In winter, coming off the Atlantic.
That's awesome. So yeah, so the article on surfing that grabbed you, and then from there you go to where?
From there, I entered Gaza late 2010, and again in the spring of 2011, and I completed a photo project, a photo story on this group of surfers, and that was really well received. It was published widely around the world, and people. Just as I had done, you know, they were really surprised. And you know, it was one of those rare things, a positive story out of a place like that.
Right.
And then the following year, 2012, Gary and I met each other. And Gary approached me about a documentary he was hoping to make on Irish photographers working around the world. And
oh, cool.
He asked me where I was working, and he had the idea to follow me as I worked. And so that's how we came together. We talked about that for a while. That documentary didn't work out in the end, but we continued to talk about Gaza, and Gary was very interested in the place as well. And yeah, we eventually began filming 2014 and finished in 2018.
Gary, did you think, looking back now, did you think that the Middle East, that Gaza was going to have this kind of an impact on you? Did you think you were going to be at Hot Docs at opening night tonight? Are you that intentional as a filmmaker and as a storyteller?
I'd like to think so. Yeah, I think Gaza became something that both of us just could not let go of. You know, once we pressed the button to go, I don't care if it took 10 years or 15 years or whatever it took, we weren't going to let it go. You know what I mean? And it was a really hard struggle, to be honest. I mean, we fought so many doors were bang closing us once we mentioned Gaza. You know, invisible reasons why people would engage with us initially and then just stop talking to us, and we never knew why. You know, I mean, it was really difficult to fund this film, but we were going to leave no stone unturned to make sure that, you know, we were going to get a film out there. We're just so happy that we managed to get the one we did, because there were so many times over that 4-year period where, regardless of losing hope for the situation in Gaza, we were losing hope for making the film and getting it finished, because, you know, unfortunately for us, it's across the board that, you know, there are an awful lot of people out there that agree with, you know, the Israeli position and policies, and an awful lot of those people have an influence in the film world too, and there was no way they were going to get involved in any film that was called Gaza or about Gaza or questioning the situation in Gaza. So it's been a long, hard struggle, to be honest, to get to where we are now. But we never, ever, ever for a second, and I mean that for a second, you know, thought that we weren't going to make it a film. We're just so happy we made this film, you know. So
maybe we can sort of wrap it up. I'd love to just chat as we close off here, and the rap artist that you guys visit and you know, introduce us to in the film, is, I'm just so glad you included that part of the story. But I'm pretty sure he says, I think either in one of the interviews, one of the voiceovers, that, you know, thoughts and words are, you know, are always stronger than bullets. And I mean, I'd like to think, you know, film has the same power as well. And I mean, I think part of the reason I asked you about your story, about how you guys got involved, is because I think it's a real it's a real call to action, you know, for others too, I believe. And I've been working in this kind of, not just this podcasting world for a while, but in international development and public engagement. How do you get people to care? How do you get people to listen? It's really a challenge, but I think you got to step into the conversation, and I'm so glad that you guys did. Tonight is the Canadian premiere, so you've shown the film elsewhere. How has it been received?
We had an unbelievable time in Hot Docs. We premiered, world premiere in Hot Docs, and we had, Sundance, I'm in Hot Docs now. There's the confusion there. Yeah, we premiered in Sundance and had 6 amazing screenings back to back, one every day for 6 days, and showed to over 2,500 people.
Wow.
Audience. And had some amazing questions and answers and discussions that went well beyond our time limits and well beyond the end of the film. And we really came away from that thinking, actually, we have created a conversation. We have sparked something. We have, there are 2,500 people on this planet now that have watched the film and have maybe a different perspective, and maybe will be mobilized to get up and do something within their own scope and try and make a change. So that's heartening. And the same here in Hot Docs. We're really looking forward to the 3 screenings here, the first of which is happening quite soon, I think. And we're really looking forward to that. And we're just delighted that people are taking the time to come and sit and watch the film and talk to us afterwards. And that's all we can hope for, really, to keep doing that for as long as we can.
That's amazing. Well, I really do appreciate you taking the time out 35 minutes before your Canadian premiere, chatting with me today here. We've been talking with Gary Keane and Andrew McConnell about their new film, Gaza, premiering at Hot Docs. Guys, you can check out more about the film too. GazaDocumentary.com is the website, is it not?
Yeah, GazaDocumentary.com, yeah.
Great. Well, thanks so much for your time today, guys. Really appreciate it. Wish you well with the film. It's the kind of movie that everyone needs to see. And again, congratulations.
Thanks, David. Much appreciated.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.